keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Make sure you guys check out UCY. Bookmark all the awesome other hosts on here. Even just bookmark the homepage, and then it'll just play live whatever host is on at the time. We got all kinds of different varying views here other than the anti-media, and obviously we have the anti-media here on three days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the same time, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern time. I'm joined here in the studio with S.M. Gibson. How are you doing tonight, man?
Doing good, man. How are you doing?
Not too bad, and we're joined on the line with our co-host, D.B. Schwartz. How are you doing, man?
Hey, how you guys doing? Just had a friend, had a baby, so... You know, pretty exciting times, dude. It just shows we're getting older and life's going on despite all the problems going on. And it's kind of, it's foreshadowing of what's going on because with the March for Climate Change, which, by the way, is completely scripted, completely co-opted. And we can get into that more if you want to later in the show. But life's going to go on, dude. It doesn't matter what these sickos that run things are going to try to do. Life will go on.
Yeah, I guess the big news of the night is this, the Pentagon has just confirmed that the U.S. is now bombing in Syria. So I guess that's basically started now. And there's all kinds of repercussions that I want to go over tonight as far as what's going on in Syria, foreign policy, how it ties in with Ukraine, Russia, Iran, all that stuff. That I want to get into, and then we want to take some callers tonight to see if we want to hear some opinions on this thing with Syria, what you guys have to say about it, what you think about what's going on and with ISIS and Assad and all that stuff. You can call us up if you feel like it. 718-717-8296 is our number, and you guys can just call us on your phone, or you could add us on Skype, the Anti-Media on Skype. The Anti-Media, you can call in that way as well. Otherwise, we're going to jump right into this stuff. We also got another big story involving cop block and some drama that went with some police-aligned groups there, and we'll get into that after we get into this whole Syria thing.
Also, since the last time we talked, Scotland voted not to be independent.
At least that's what the polling says.
Well...
And, you know, you got a few different things, I guess, in my opinion, at play here with the whole Scotland thing. It kind of shows, really, if it was a legitimate vote count, which is hard to say. I mean, you know, the U.S. always jumps whenever there's an election in a place like Iran, or whenever there's an election in a place like that's not in our favor. We're always quick to jump to this conclusion that basically the election is illegitimate. But yeah, when it's a country like Scotland, and the vote turns out in the favor of, obviously it was in our country's government's favor and the political establishment, because Obama came out and said he was against Scottish independence.
Tony Blair has been speaking up more than he has since he left office over this.
Yeah, all these guys basically said, you know, whether we're talking about Obama, other pundits, and
well, look who's so against it. It's ruining the globalist plans, man. If Scotland were to become independent, then it opens the door for anybody in the so-called first world, because the third world's always going to splinter along tribal lines because they're fighting over a lot less resources. But in the land of the plenty, why do we break up at all? We break up because we understand we have tyrannical government, and that's why the Scotland vote came up. I'm sure that eventually in our country we'll have something similar happen too.
Well, you know, it's kind of hopeful to think that one day we'll have something like that happen here, where it comes up for a vote and it doesn't have to go out into the streets. The unnerving thing for me was the fact that a country was allowed to have its independence and they were given a vote and they voted against being free. They had a decision. They didn't have to pick up arms. They didn't have to march in the streets. All they had to do was go check a box. And they voted to stay where they were. It disturbs me about the human mind that they would do that. And I know the polling shows that the youth was the highest yes vote in Scotland. And I guess that is a good sign. But even still, regardless of your age, how can you vote to stay with a nation that is about to get involved in a war that's involved with us, that has nothing to do with them? One journalist of theirs got beheaded on a video, which may or may not be true, and it's all done for propaganda.
Yeah, man, I mean, you know, and that's the one thing that really stuck out to me was the amount of effort that organizations like the BBC and the Telegraph and the Independent, whatever they're called, all the British mainstream corporate media stuff, the amount of effort they put into convincing the Scottish people that they were going to be basically almost like dead if they voted to go away to break away from the UK.
They
even said, yeah, they're like,
if
you guys split apart, you're going to get hit by terrorists, you know, and that's just how life's going to be. That's what these corporate media outlets were telling the people of Scotland. And that shows you why there's such a skewing of the numbers. And this is, and I question the validity of the polling numbers, but let's just say that they're valid. It shows you why there's a skew. There's the extremely old people voting almost completely no, and then it skews downward from there. And with the very young voting almost completely yes. You know, and it shows the amount of propaganda that takes hold.
And there's a simple reason for it, too, a really, really simple reason that people tend to overlook. In the UK, what's been going on is a very, very obvious erosion of social services, where if you didn't have a job, you'd go on the dole, but you'd get health care, you'd still have everything. And what the young people are seeing is it's not necessarily going to be there that much longer, and the economy is not going to get any better. So really, they have nothing to lose. Whereas all of the older people that voted, which was 2 million of the people that voted to stay with the UK, and by the way, you're right, Nick, when they looked up at what the demographics were, 45 and up were 90% of those 2 million, man. So it's the people that have their pensions entrusted with the British banks. There's no way they're going to claim independence and lose their life savings, and that's what it came down to.
Yeah, and then, you know, the British people, I mean, the youth, the Scottish youth, man, they're probably just like us, where they're like, okay, they probably have the equivalent of Social Security and the equivalent of Obamacare and all this stuff. And they're like, dude, we're never going to get to indulge in any of these things because look at the pyramid scheme of the debt. I mean, Europe's got just as bad debt that that the U.S. has. They're pretty horrible as well. In fact, a lot of countries in Europe have way worse rates of debt than we have. Even though ours is underestimated, man. I mean, we're already at the level of, I think, where Cyprus was at, or Greece, one of those.
We have $268 trillion in unfunded social service liabilities.
Yeah, and so we're actually at the level that Greece was at. The only difference is that we have this reserve currency. But back to this, back to everything in Scotland, man. I mean, everybody, like you were saying, is tied up in all these entitlements that have to do with the British. And even if they didn't, the media painted it as yeah, you know, if you do this, you're probably going to lose your pension. Just like when Obama was trying to get the government, you know, that time when the government shut down, when he was telling the senior citizens that they might not get their Social Security. Well, I mean, these are like the same tactics that they use over and over all around the world, and that's what they use on the Scottish people. So basically what I'm thinking is that if the votes were actually legitimately counted, the biggest reason why the yes vote lost was because of the British corporate media pumping out propaganda that was fear-mongering, that just scared the hell out of the older people, and obviously the younger people that consume their news on the internet were not scared off by it because they were able to see through the propaganda.
Well, I think, too, because our generation and the young people grew up with much more free information because of the internet, that... And the older generation went through World War II and a little bit behind that, and when everyone was prosperous, they still had faith in their governments, they still believed in their governments. What has our generation experienced? We had Bill Clinton lying under oath. That was, you know, one of the first main political events for a lot of people our age. You remember a guy that's lying and doesn't get in trouble? Regardless of what he did, it's irrelevant. Then you have Bush getting into office, and... 9/11. I don't think most people our age believe 9/11 happened the way they say it did.
And Operation Freedom was a real war that was never declared. I mean, that blew my mind when I was 13 years old.
Absolutely. I mean, we've experienced Vietnam for our generation. They just don't want to call it the same thing. They paint a different picture of it. Maybe there weren't as many American soldiers that were killed, but... We've experienced just needless, senseless war, needless, senseless death. And our generation's sick of it. We're tired of it. And I think that personally could have a lot of the effect of the ages, and especially Glasgow voting yes, whereas the rest of the country was not so in favor of their own freedom.
Because what does this get us, man? We see lines for the iPhone 6 in New York City while this... co-opted March for Climate Change is going on, which, by the way, is touting not only the stripping of constitutional personhood, which I don't agree with at all, but we know it's a slippery slope for now saying, well, people don't need rights either because they're the property of the state. And we can twist it that way. And, of course, it's been co-opted also to provide for a way to ease people into a carbon tax system when we damn well know that all energy is free and pollution free and that they're just suppressing it. We know it. So it's just a big sham, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I personally know some people that went to the march and stuff, and I know they're good people. I have no clue about who was leading it or whatever. I heard it was organized by Avaaz or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, the good thing about this march is that it ideally raises awareness to the horrible polluting that we do all over the place, and all this, you know, all this plastic trash and all this pollution. Whether people out there believe in the whole man-made climate change thing or not, I mean, we could all agree that pollution is horrible for us, and we need to reduce the amount of pollution. And the funny thing is that the government is always like superficially supporting, you know, green measures and stuff, talking about how we have to reduce pollution and oil use and stuff. But I mean, the fact that they forget to mention normally in the corporate media is that the government is the single largest polluter in the world. I mean, the single largest entity that burns yep. fossil fuels is the U.S. government and the U.S. military.
Specifically, the United States Air Force, which produces 2% of the world's pollution by itself.
Yeah, and you know, China produces, as a whole country, they produce more emissions and stuff. But we're talking as a single entity, you know, it's like the U.S. military definitely outweighs everybody else. And they want to come around, and the government wants to tax us, say, hey, you guys got to do this, you guys got to do that. Well, yeah, we should, but, I mean, you guys got to remember that the government is the biggest polluter out there.
Well, TV was talking about, you know, the Air Force, the Navy, and the military causing a lot of this pollution, and there's a story up right now on livefreelivenatural.com that's talking about how the CEO of Lockheed Martin is on the board of directors at Monsanto, and there is also... basically the head PR person of Microsoft, which is in bed with every corporation in the world, and their government, is on the board of directors of Monsanto. And it all ties back in together. It's, you know, they know what they're doing, they know what they're causing, and they just do not care. It's all about profit.
And why did this march get the play that it got, and why did the march against Monsanto, which really attacks the root cause of the problems, not these asinine solutions, which by the way, are they're going to be absolutely genocidal to the third world. If we put carbon caps on developing nations and don't provide them free energy in another way, sustainably, what do you think they're going to do?
Well, you know as well as I do that the whole situation is political, and because that they can profit off of the recent marches of climate change and they can get a carbon tax passed, then they're going to promote that in the mainstream media.
Yeah, one thing has to be made clear. Fixing pollution, fixing climate change is not, the government is not going to fix that.
No.
They are the biggest abuser of that stuff. And basically what they do is they let very large corporations that pollute a lot of stuff, they let them just pay these nominal fines and these nominal taxes, and they get to just exploit the hell out of everybody else. And then all of us that are paying the taxes and stuff get to foot the bill for it all. So I wouldn't expect the government to act in a way to kind of counter the actual pollution. That's something that we're going to have to do as a people. We're going to have to demand it. And I don't think we can get to it in the way that they're trying to do it now through taxes and all that stuff. That's just not something that's going to happen. And with all these energy monopolies, all these energy regulations, these barriers of entry just to open up a community owned utility. I mean, up until, what was it, a month or two ago in California, you couldn't even have a community owned utility. It was against the law. And luckily that we were able to, they passed something that revoked that and let people do it. So I mean, what these corporations, along with their media, I mean, with their political handlers, what they do is they monopolize all these marketplaces, and they're creating these. They're basically creating manufactured crises, because this whole thing with climate change, with the amount of oil and the amount of fossil fuels that we use, all of this stuff could have been averted. What, 80 years ago, if we would have gone and switched to more efficient stuff. We would have never abandoned hemp. If we would have never moved away from the electric car. The government had a big hand in that. They manufactured the crisis, and now they're trying to provide a solution to a manufactured crisis. It's just typical how these guys do this stuff, and it's just horrible. We have a caller on from 940. You're on the Anti-Media Radio. What do you want to talk about?
Yes, I want to. I'd like, hello, my name's Jesse Ray. I'm a big fan of y'all people. And I would love to talk about the new bombing campaign we're doing in Syria.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, what do you think about it, first of all?
I think he don't know what the hell he's doing. Because if we want to defeat ISIS, we have to put ground troops on the ground no matter what. You want me to tell you why?
Sure.
Because we cannot defeat the group by bombing campaign. It won't happen. They are too high tech for that.
Now,
what we need to do... Go ahead.
Do you think that more violence will stop violence?
On a dead shopping center, yes, I do. Because this group we're dealing with, they are the most dangerous group on the planet. And they don't give a shit about people's lives, you know?
Yeah, definitely. They have shown to be very, very ruthless. And it's
horrible. But look all the beheading they're doing right now. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, they've done some horrible things. But, you know, for me and my stance on this whole thing, I look at it and I see the war on terror, you know? And as far as I've seen the war on terror ever since 9/11... all we've seen is an actual increase in the amount of these terror groups. There's been a 58% increase in the jihadist militant groups. And so I think you're right when you said that, I mean, and the fact that bombing these guys isn't going to fix the problem, I think you're right about that. However, I do disagree on the ground troops, but I mean, it seems like these tactics that we're using, and judging by the plan or what they call a plan that they've put forward so far, that's been approved through Congress, it's basically the same exact thing that we've been doing ever since the war on terror started. And considering that none of those policies really worked, and I think ISIS is a perfect example of the failure of the war on terror, because if the war on terror was working, then it would be impossible for ISIS to exist because we're defeating terrorism. But unfortunately, the war on terror, just like the war on drugs, it kind of only made the problem worse, because what these guys are really mad about is U.S. intervention. And the more U.S. intervention, the more mad and the more people that they're able to recruit, you know?
And look at ISIS. They are recruiting American people to go over there and fight with them. They're like, come on, wake up, people. Wake up, Mr. Obama. You got to do something else. Bombing campaign will not stop them. You know, because they got Mitchell. They got fucking, they make $6 million a day, okay? Come on.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think we definitely need to change up our tactics when we're going to try to face down terrorism, because obviously the stuff that we've been doing is just not working. And it's very... It's become,
don't tell.
Well,
okay.
Well, what I think they've done already and what we're going to see soon is that they're going to destabilize Assad and arm the Kurds. The Kurds are just going to mop everybody up in that area, ISIS included, and we're going to get the fractures we've wanted all along.
Well, you also got to agree with me, too. If we had not left Iraq back in 2009 like Obama did, none of the problem would be where we are now, you know?
But
even
that
back in... Back in 2007, President Bush warned everybody, do not leave Iraq alone. Do not get out of Iraq, because this country will fall back into chaos. And look at what happened.
That's very true, but at the same time, if we would not have entered Iraq in the first place because of 15 Saudi Arabians and you know, supposedly attacking America, and then we decide to go into Iraq, we would not be in this situation as it was. You know, as much as Fox News loved to tout how they hated Saddam Hussein, he was actually there protecting the Christians, and it was when he was gone is when all these Christians started getting just slaughtered. So Saddam Hussein was actually good for what we're about to fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a complicated, our foreign policy is so complicated, because if we think back even further, Saddam Hussein was our own guy that we kind of helped put into power, and he was our power broker in the region, and he was our ally at a certain time. In fact, we supplied him with the chemical weapons that he ended up using on the Kurds.
That's true.
But he wanted gold for oil, just like Gaddafi did.
And they got off the old standard in, what, 1990, or was it 2000?
I can't remember, but
I think 2000.
You know, and the thing is that so for a while he was our buddy, and we set him up, and yeah, he did horrible things under our watch. At the time, we just turned a blind eye to it, and then all of a sudden in 2003, when he actually didn't really do anything, we went and invaded the region, and then we knocked him out of power. Now at the time, Saddam Hussein, just like Gaddafi did in Syria, he had a pretty stable region. He had all those groups kind of in a state of content where there wasn't very much extremism going on in Iraq. And when we knocked him out of power, we created a power vacuum, and all these other groups came and filled the void. So the unfortunate thing about American foreign policy, I think, is that we end up causing all of these problems that we end up going back in to fix. And it's the perfect example to me, more of a domestic front, is what we see going on with all the immigration coming up from Guatemala and stuff. Because we did the same thing to Guatemala. We overthrew their government, installed a military dictatorship, funded the rebels, all this stuff. And now all these people are trying to get out of Guatemala because now the economy has fallen into shreds, you know, and the country has become very, very unstable. And it's the same exact thing we did to Iraq. So that's, for me, I mean, I agree with you to the point that I don't think that this tactic is going to win this war. And even though I agree that it's like very horrible what's going on, I just don't see how more American intervention is actually going to, you know, fix it. I think
what's the end game for us? I mean, how do we end up winning? We're going to put in 3-4 client states in there and arm them to the teeth, and then they're going to fight everybody that dares to go against us. That's what it's looking like.
One thing, we do not need to give out weapons to the rebels. You can't trust the rebels in Syria because they are killing each other right now.
Well,
so who can we trust, you know? That's the thing. Who can we trust?
We can't trust our own government. John Kerry got in front of Congress last week and testified, oh, no, these, if you give arms to the rebels, they're not going to end up in the hands of ISIS. And they still don't know to this day, really, what's the difference between...
Yep, that's true. They do. And another thing, ISIS would not be as powerful as they are right now if Obama had not released the main leader, the Baghdadi. If he had not released him, ISIS would not be as powerful as he is right now. Everybody in the Middle East is afraid of this guy. They don't want to go after him because they know what could happen.
Yeah, you're right. Baghdadi was in our custody for like 5 years, you know,
and we should let him go.
Yeah, that fact alone kind of shows incompetence on the side of the administrative side of what's going on in Iraq. And you got to remember, we've dumped how many trillions? I mean, conservative estimates put it at $5 trillion that we've spent since 2013 between Iraq and Afghanistan. And for to show that kind of incompetence, where we just let that guy slip right through our fingers. I mean, it's kind of like the same story with the Boston bombers. These guys were interviewed by the FBI. Russia sent us information about them, and they still slipped through our fingers. I mean, our government is taking so much money, billions upon billions of dollars. They got the NSA tracking everybody's phone call.
Exactly.
They got the DHS turning into a police state.
They're tracking these guys, man. So when they release them, they're getting released, and they're tracking them, and they're listening to everything they're doing, and they have them chipped, man, inside their brainstem, I'm sure. We're way beyond the level people think we're at. That's where we're at.
You know who the main responsibility this is for ISIS becoming the group they are now? Obama. It's his fault that, because he said this team was a juvenile team, okay? JV team. You do not come out and tell them, hey, you know what, man, you ain't nothing. We don't care about you. Hello? Look what they've done in the last 2 months. They've taken over half of Iraq. You got to remember, we fought for Iraq. All that land we had is now under control of ISIS. The Iraqi government, you can't trust them because their own military don't want to fight.
Well, ultimately, though, it is their country. And, you know, for the United States to be able to protect you and your family, they need to protect our borders and not necessarily be so worried about what's happening in the borders of Iraq. And because when they do that, all they're doing is creating more enemies that creates more fear, which perpetrates us screaming louder for bloodthirst going back in overseas.
You know, yeah. What the dumbest move of Obama he could ever do is by telling them it's the enemy of the United States. Oh, no, we're not going to send ground troops in. You know what that's going to do to ISIS? That's going to make them even emboldened to do more beheadings and kidnapping, ransom. Do not tell your enemy, oh, don't worry, Mr. Osama. No, we're not going to send ground troops in after you. You don't do that. You don't give the enemy information like that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's horrible foreign policy, but I also fault Bush. I mean, just as much, if not more, than Obama, because you got to remember, the Bush administration are the ones that sold us the Iraq War in the first place, which really set the stage for ISIS. Because, you know, prior to 2003, when we went into Iraq, Al Qaeda didn't actually exist in Iraq. There were no Al Qaeda fighters in Iraq. The only reason they went into Iraq was to fight against the U.S. And they never left. And all we did was when we left, it was even easier for them to recruit and set up bases and information hubs. And then the other thing, where Obama, I think, made the biggest mistake of his presidency, was funding the Syrian opposition in the Syrian civil war. because that is really what made the final ingredients to ISIS, is by creating that no man's land out in Syria where these guys were able to run free, and they were getting funneled weapons from the U.S. And just recently, ISIS wound up with like 40 Toyota trucks that we sent over there. And they captured a bunch of weapons off the Iraqi army and stuff like that.
But
so, I mean, these guys
said that never happened.
These guys are running around with our own weapons that we paid for and we built, and we sent some of them to them in Syria, and then they captured the rest of them in Iraq. You know, so, I mean, it's two sides of the same coin over here, and I think the end goal, I mean, I think ISIS is kind of an afterthought, because if you look at the rhetoric that comes from the real warmongers in Congress, like John Kerry, Lindsey Graham, and these Republican guys, the end goal is really to go after Assad. I mean, ISIS is the afterthought. Assad is the real gold mine that they're going after, because we have to remember that Assad is blocking a pipeline that goes from Saudi Arabia into Europe, and Europe is a huge consumer of oil. Thinking of, you know, talking about this whole climate change march and stuff, the whole climate change argument. I mean, these guys are fighting wars to secure oil, which destroys the climate. I mean, the government has no place in talking about climate change. They are the biggest perpetrator of harming the climate.
And what would taking out Assad do strategically to Russia? It cuts him out of the game for at least a couple decades, because you can get the oil out from the Caspian that way, man. And then you can starve Russia out. That's all they got is oil.
Yeah. You know what? Here's what I think about the President of Syria. I think we should have bombed him last year when he did the chemical attack against his people. I was saying, bomb the shit out of them, you know? Come on. You don't gas your own people and kill 3,000 people, okay?
I know there were definitely reports in the mainstream media that came out, for what that's worth, that said that was actually done by the rebels to entice us to go into war with them. And that's when the American people stood up last year and didn't go into war with them.
Yeah, it's hard to say because there was no real independent investigation into those chemical attacks. And I've seen very, very conflicting reports that show that both Assad and the rebels were responsible for that. But I don't think bombing Assad is a solution, because Assad, just like Saddam Hussein, he is a dictator, and he's not the greatest guy, but at the same time, Syria was pretty stable. And you got to remember, we also tried to overthrow the Syrian government back in 1949 as well. And so there's always that blowback from that too. And Assad had Syria pretty well and pretty stable. And it wasn't until the Arab Spring where we went in there and funded the opposition, gave them weapons, arms through our allies like Saudi Arabia and Qatar. It wasn't until then that the Syrian war escalated into this full-blown conflict.
Exactly.
I mean, of course, Russia is at fault, too, because Russia was funding and propping up Assad. But you got to remember, there's two sides of every coin. So the U.S. and Russia are both responsible for all the bloodshed that's gone on in Syria, all the chemical attacks, whether it was done by Assad or by the rebels. The two remaining superpowers, and we're both America and Russia are looking like former superpowers. I know Russia is referred to as a former superpower, but more and more we're looking like a former superpower. But it's our proxy wars that have basically kept up the Syrian war. It caused, 150,000 people to die. There's been almost, by now, there must have been 2-3 million refugees that left Syria because of the conflict.
Oh, no. In the children, 1.6 million people have left Syria going to children alone.
Now, what do you think about this? You brought this up to the caller. Because of the situation we are in with ISIS, and it's so horrible, and you feel like that we need to go in there and put troops on the ground, well, that was created because we intervened in Iraq and overthrew their government. And now we're at a situation where our government is wanting to go into Syria and do the exact same thing we did to Iraq. If you see what the result was with Iraq and it created ISIS, how do you feel like toppling Syria will solve any of those issues and not just create more destabilization, more terror groups, and last time it was Al-Qaeda, this time it's ISIS, next time who knows what it'll be, you know?
You know what? It all fought that we created ISIS because we gave the weapon to the rebels and they turned the weapon against us. So basically what I'm thinking is that don't overthrow the government. Whew, that is a good one. I think that we should leave the government as it is and just punish him a little bit, you know. But our main focus should be ISIS. That is our main group right now, taking out the leadership of ISIS.
But ISIS is a ghost. ISIS is very faceless right now. And we just see these black masks with some sand behind people, and they're beheading people, they're driving these trucks, they're murdering Christians by the thousands, and it's absolutely terrible. But how do you identify them? How do you know that this more killing is not going to generate more killing?
The best bet we could do, man, honestly, is just arm the Kurds to the teeth and drone the hell out of them, and that's it. That's all we can do. If we go in there with troops like everybody wants to do, Russia's just going to feel so threatened they may just decide to go in there too, and then that's World War III, and then me and you are going to go fight soon.
Yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to bring up in this whole thing about ISIS, is the bigger implication on the bigger on the grand scheme of things, because, you know, the one thing that we talked about is that Russia has been funding the Assad regime while the U.S. has been funding the opposition, including ISIS, up until a few months ago. We have to remember, Iran and Syria have this quote-unquote mutual defense pact, where if Iran ever goes into war, that automatically draws in, if Syria ever goes to war, that automatically draws in Iran. And this is where we have to start to think about things at the World War level, because this is almost a very similar situation that led to World War I. So we have to keep in mind that it's not just Syria that we're messing with here. If we go into Syria and we do the wrong thing where it makes Syria declare war on the U.S., that automatically draws in Iran, and then that makes implications for Russia. Because the other thing you have to remember about Russia is that their only base outside of Crimea and outside of Russia is in Syria. It's in a port in Syria. That's their only Navy base outside of Russia. So, this could lead to implications that are much bigger than just ISIS. And let's be real about it. ISIS isn't a threat to the United States. I mean, they can say whatever they want online. It's not going to make people go and blow up whatever. But if we go in and start this thing and then Russia gets involved and Iran gets involved, then there could be a legitimate threat to the United States, and that's not something we want to do. So if we look back at all the foreign policy blunders that we've done over the years, everything we're doing right now is just escalating into this situation where we're definitely going to try to overthrow Assad. That's completely clear right now, to me, anyway.
Okay, I got a question for you, okay? Senator Ted Cruz. He wanted to pass a bill that would take away the citizenships of any United States citizen who go over to fight with ISIS. What do you think that should have passed? Because you got to think, if they fight on a deal with ISIS, they could come back over to the United States and they could cause a major damage to the United States.
Yeah.
So my question is, do you think the President and the Senate and the Republican, you think they should have passed that bill to take away the United States citizenship when they leave the country?
I don't know. I think actually that kind of thing would probably backfire, because if these guys do come back in the country and they do try to use like their regular passports and their regular citizenship, then they're going to automatically get caught. At least we'd like to hope that. But looking at the track record of the government, maybe we may not be so faithful in that, because they did miss the Boston bomber. They didn't catch that.
In 9/11, they didn't catch him either.
9/11, and then they didn't recognize Baghdadi was a threat when they had him in custody. So, I mean, it's tough to say. I think definitely to protect the homeland, yeah, we got to keep an eye on these guys that are going over to the Middle East to go fight with these guys. But if the NSA does what it says it does, and they claim to be doing this for our own protection, then I would think that they'd be all over these guys. And I would think that we wouldn't have to worry about anything, because that's what these organizations are for, so that we can feel safe and secure. At least that's what they always tell us. Hey, well, we're going to take away a little bit of your freedom just to give you more security. But these guys give us all this superficial security. They took away a bunch of freedom. But in the end, it's like, oh, well, they could still come hit us in the homeland. What the hell are these guys doing up there? If they're not doing their job and protecting us, what the hell are they doing?
You were talking about the war on terror earlier.
Well,
and the war on terror is nothing more than a war on our freedoms. Because what is the only result the American people have seen is the war on terror? Our freedoms have been eroded.
Yep, and how do you expect to catch sophisticated enemies when all you're really doing with your intelligence scope is metadata and letting it get crunched through algorithm and AI processes that really are they're just going to be too slow, man. People adapt, and they're not going to use these channels. You really think ISIS is using Gmail? I mean, this is this is where we're losing the battle.
And look what happened at Boston bombing. Russia told us that watch out for these people. Watch out for them. They are coming back to the United States. They have been trained by the rebels in south of Russia. They are dangerous criminals that are coming back. You know what our government did? Oh, no. We're not going to do shit about them. Guess what happened? Boston bombing.
Yeah, man, and to me, it really calls into question the legitimacy of the Patriot Act, the legitimacy of the NSA, because, I mean, it almost seems like these guys kind of knew that these guys were going to do things. I mean, the guy had a YouTube channel that openly talked about jihad and stuff. I mean, it's almost like they had foreknowledge of this stuff, and they just decided not to act on it, you know, so, I mean...
And if it is truly so bad that they're stopping 99% of it and the 1% getting through is... But they're going to say, well, we can't stop everything and we need to squeeze in even more. Well, our answer needs to be no. It's not working out. No matter what you guys do, no matter how many data centers you guys build, it's not going to work. The only thing that's going to work is if we can protect ourselves in some way, and you need to make that possible.
Now the question is, if these people come back from Syria and Iraq or being trained by the ISIS group, what is the possibility of them attacking the United States? Because all the people kind of come back to the United States sooner or later. So they got bombing, they got all type of training. What would the net terrorist act be? How many people are we going to lose then?
Well,
what did Obama say about, oh, I'm sorry, I did not know that they were coming back to the United States. Give me a freaking break, Obama.
I think the biggest thing we need to do is start to understand why these people want to attack us. And that way we could actually legitimately take the wind out of their sails. You know, because obviously with the war on terror, invading Afghanistan, invading Iraq, I mean, if you look at Afghanistan, there was just a car bombing the other day that took out a general, right? And Afghanistan...
No, it was not a car bombing. It was he was shocked.
It was an insider. All right, it was a guy that infiltrated the army or whatever, and then he shot a U.S. general. So, I mean, this is what we did in Afghanistan. We went in, bombed them, invaded, put a couple hundred thousand troops in there, eradicated. You know, at least tried to eradicate all the visible stuff. And that's the problem: is that like on the surface, you can go bomb these guys, you could shoot at them, you could blow up their houses, you could throw them in jail. But in the end, what we're fighting against in the war on terror is an idea, you know, and it's an invisible entity that you can't really eradicate. The only way you can battle an idea is with a better idea, you know, and so obviously the ideas that we have now to combat these other bad ideas aren't working, because our version of fixing the problem is a corporate oligarchy. That's what we set up in these countries. We say that we brought democracy to Afghanistan. How long has the prime minister been prime minister? 12 years now? He's been prime minister for 12 years. That doesn't look like a democracy to me. That looks more like a dictatorship. Iraq? I mean, the reason why the Iraqi prime minister had to step down was because he had a horrible oligarchy government that was keeping a lot of people out. It wasn't inclusive. It was divisive. It made a bunch of people not like them. And so what
okay,
we were
I got
doing
a question
is,
for you.
Sure.
Remember when Obama went to our army base sometime last week? He told them that we're going to send ground troops into Iraq to go with the Iraq army to go on the hunt, right? You remember when he said that?
Yeah.
But the question is, he said no combat. What would happen if the militants were being fired upon by ISIS? What, you don't want them to return fire?
Yeah, I
but
mean,
how the fuck did he kill himself when they're being attacked by ISIS?
Yeah,
Predator
drones.
Let me kind of, I think this is a good point to elaborate on here, because first of all, you're right. I mean, these guys aren't just going to lay down their arms and say, okay, you got me, I can't shoot back. No, they're of course they're going to shoot back. So if any of these guys get fired upon, they automatically turn into ground troops. And so that's just kind of a given. Now, here's the second thing to keep in mind. And there's three things here. Obama can't openly come out and say we're going to send a ground force into Iraq because it would be horribly, horribly unpopular, especially with the Democrats, with the Democratic voters, because these guys hated Bush for going into Iraq, and Obama ran on a platform of closing down the war in Iraq. So Obama can't come out and say anything about sending ground troops.
And they have
in Iraq.
Midterms coming up in 2 weeks,
and their elections are coming up very soon. So that's one of the reasons. The other thing to think about is that we actually do have a lot of ground troops over there, but they're not considered troops because they're not in the army. But these are private contractors. It's speculated that there's already, before this whole thing started back up again, there was already about 10,000 military contractors in Iraq. At this point in time, there could be already up to 15, 20,000 military contractors in Iraq, and they're going to carry out the same duties that a military soldier would do, except they get paid like four times more money, which is just basically going to cost us as the taxpayer a lot more taxes.
We've also had U.S. personnel on the ground in Iraq since we left Iraq, except the name was changed to advisors. There's somebody there protecting our embassies. You know, they built a huge embassy. It's not just sitting there.
Yeah, the embassy alone had like, what, 15,000 people working in it?
Yeah,
it was enormous.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. And they can call the exact same thing by a different name, but you're still there. We never left. This was never a situation where we were meant to leave. It was the perpetual war that started when Bush invaded after 9/11. There was never a need for it. And now that's all created a new problem, which is fed into relationships with Russia, which is going to lead us into World War III.
But my question is Obama ready to take responsibility when our troops that go on the mission with the Iraqi National Army, is he ready to take responsibility for the death of the troops? Because
no.
He admitted that he did not want them to attack the fire pond, right? But everybody knows that once their troops leave their base, they have a big freaking target on their back. Look at what happened when we traded the five war criminals from the terror group for one traitor, one military guy who traded his whole unit back in Afghanistan. Remember, he broke the law on that one too, you know?
But we shouldn't be there in the first place. DB, elaborate on that. I know you know a lot about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's never going to be a justification for trading over 40 or 50 or however many guys we did it for one guy who's a deserter. And the military knows that, and they know they're being politicized, and these are human beings. They're starting to lose their benefits. I can't see this going on perpetually, dude. It's just not going to happen. Boots on the ground or not, I just don't see the troops having the willpower, the morale to go in and get into this fight, and they're just not going to do it.
So do you think Obama should be arrested for breaking the law of the United States?
That's up to the military, because they're the only people that could ever accomplish that. That's entirely up to them.
Now, personally, I think Obama should have been I think he made his first mistake. His biggest mistake was arming the Syrian rebels in the Civil War.
Yep.
His first really big mistake was overthrowing Gaddafi, and for that, I think he could have, in a vacuum, he could have been arrested for that, because he basically did an unconstitutional act by overthrowing another government without getting declaration of war from Congress.
But did Obama do that, or did the CIA just do that with or without his approval?
And that's the thing, is that our government has been such a huge beast that even though Obama is kind of the talking head and he gets a lot of the heat, the people that are really pulling the strings up there are these advisors,
yeah, exactly.
You know, people in the CIA, the Brzezinskis of the world, and all these advisors. These guys are unelected, and that makes it even worse. I mean, at least Obama could be voted out of office, you know, at least in theory. But these advisors never leave. I mean, you see Mitt Romney's advisor on Fox News almost every day shilling for more war in Syria. So under a Romney presidency, the same exact thing, if not worse, would have already happened. So I do agree that Obama should probably be arrested because he's broken the Constitution so many times.
But there's
a lot of people that really need to be arrested, and I can think of like 500 and maybe 20 guys in Congress, except for the 15 people that are actually decent up there. I mean, all of those people should be tried for treasonous acts. I mean, they all passed the NDAA. A lot of them agreed to the NDAA. A lot of them agreed to the Patriot Act. That's all treasonous stuff, you know, and all of them should have lost their jobs because of that. And even going back to Clinton, Clinton shouldn't have, I mean, the whole thing about Monica Lewinsky, I mean, that's one thing. That's outside of the law. That's outside of the government. It's an immoral act, but it has nothing to do with his governing. But the wars that he waged while he was in office, the bombings that he waged in the caucuses and in Eurasia and all that stuff, that is what he should have been impeached and arrested for. Not for the affair. So, I mean, every president, it seems, ever since, what, JFK, even JFK did some horrible things when it comes to the Bay of Pigs and Cuba and all that stuff. A lot of these guys have done horrible things, but I think in the end, it comes down to them being more or less just talking heads, and there's a lot of infrastructure behind the scenes that is really the root of where all this horrible, horrible ideas and all this horrible policy really comes from.
Well, I think this goes back to a lot of the situation today, maybe with the NFL stuff that's going on, but a lot of it. But there were more bombs dropped on Kosovo on the day of the Columbine shootings than any other day. Why is that? There was a distraction in the media to stop you from seeing what's going on overseas. And I think it's exactly what's going on now, the stuff that they're putting in the media. It's this, it's that. And they don't want you to focus on what's actually happening. They don't want you to see that we're about to go to war again. The exact same president that campaigned on saying we're not going into Iraq is not only going into Iraq, he's going to go into Syria, he's going to start a conflict with Russia inadvertently, and it's going to just be what it is.
And DB, I had a question for you, man. How do you think all of this stuff ties in with Ukraine?
Yeah, I mean, just another piece on the chessboard, dude. That's all it is. Ukraine's just like a different way to get in. They're going to keep prodding Russia. I really think at some point it's going to be a very strange thing that happens, because culturally we're really different from Russia, but are we really different? Are we really, really different? And what's the biggest threat, the real threat right now to the world, the one that has more soldiers than we have people?
China.
So we know it's going to happen, so we know this is theater.
So we have another caller in here from 818 area code. The woman from 940, feel free to stay on and join the roundtable here. What do you want to talk about from 818? Can you hear me there?
Yeah, this is Manny. Manny from Arkansas. Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good, man. How you doing?
I'm pretty good listening to your show up there. You're having a good topic today, you know, stuff like that. You know, we were talking about, you know, arresting all these politicians because they're breaking the Constitution, but I kind of started to realize that, you know, every cop right now in New York arresting people for peaceful protesters and all these things are happening to us. But, you know, they're breaking the Constitution and nobody's arresting them, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly, and it kind of goes along the lines of how these politicians are above the law. And like DD was saying earlier, yeah, Obama deserves to be arrested. The only way to arrest Obama? Probably a military coup at this point. So, and we don't want that either. But like you were saying, these officers are arresting people at the New York Climate March that were just flexing their First Amendment right. Agree with them or disagree with them, doesn't matter. They were within their constitutional rights to be protesting, and these people are getting arrested. I saw a polar bear getting arrested in one of those pictures.
Yeah, it was for decent exposure because of his ass. But
yes, and these cops are agents of the state that are breaking the Constitution, and yet the cops don't even, I mean, just for arresting a guy, I mean, we talk about firing a cop for killing a guy. We should be talking about firing cops just for violating our First Amendment. I completely agree with you.
Okay, I got a question on that one. The war is happening here in the United States than anywhere else, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. There's a war going on right now for our own freedom. And if you look at, and we talked about at the beginning of the show, the whole thing that went on in Scotland and how the mainstream media basically hung the yes vote out to dry because they put all this propaganda out. when it comes down to our freedom here at home, do you think the corporate media is going to jump to our side and say, hey, guys, you should awaken to your freedoms and start taking back the police state? No, these
Only
guys are going
to...
if
they're worried for their own lives will they start turning on their masters. And that would only happen if the military has a massive consciousness awakening, which is happening, man. And that's what's freaking them out more than anything, especially the veterans that are coming home. They're all waking up, and they're waking all their friends up.
Absolutely. The Adam Kocheches of the world, the Ron Paul, I mean, more military donated to Ron Paul's campaign than any other presidential campaign in 2012 because he was the only one that didn't want to take him to war.
Okay, I got a question about that guy, about the police state. Remember that cop that killed a black kid in Missouri, right, in Ferguson?
Yeah.
Okay, my question is, who do you think should be held responsible for that killing? Should it be the cop who was defending his life? Or should it be that kid that who, 10 minutes before the shooting, were an armed robbery at the convenience store and was smarting off to the cop?
Well, I think that, first of all, it should really come down to an independent investigation, and that's what I'm hoping it really does come down to. Now, there was recent testimony from people that were witnesses that basically they don't disagree with the fact that there's a possibility that Mike Brown was assaulting the cop, but what they do corroborate on is the fact that at the time he was shot, he was not assaulting the cop. He was actually had his back turned to the cop.
And had his hands in the air.
You know, so I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I think the whole thing with Ferguson is it's a reaction to the police state, because it's not just Mike Brown. I mean, if we look at the numbers, the amount of people being killed by police right now it's never been higher. And if you look at the other side of the coin, which is how many people are getting shot by cops, because you wonder, well, if the cops are shooting a bunch of people, you think it's because they're under more and more of a threat, but that's actually not true. There's been less police. The number of police killed by citizens has never been lower. So I think, regardless of the individual details of the Mike Brown case, I think that all the protests and outrage that grew upon the Mike Brown killing, it really stems from this growing police state and people starting to realize, okay, well, maybe it's not a good idea that the police have MRAPs and tanks and grenade launchers and all this, you know, the LRAD, which was the sonic weapon that is supposed to dissipate protesters, all the, you know, the tear gas and stuff. Those are chemical weapons that they're using here. You know, and we talked about earlier in the show about in Syria how the chemical weapons were used and how awful that was. But, I mean, these guys are using chemical weapons on us right here in the U.S. They're using tear gas, which is banned under the U.N. Convention or whatever, and they're using it on
Correct.
Us.
Yeah. But my opinion was scary. I'll tell you what's scary, you know, picking up. I mean, I wouldn't want to go into a Walmart, pick up a BB gun rifle, because right now the case that's coming from Ohio through my contacts is they're at the grand jury, it met today and a meeting tomorrow and Wednesday on the John Crawford case where he got shot at Walmart for picking up that rifle, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and that's another, just it exemplifies what happened. And John Crawford was a young black guy, and he was in Walmart with his girlfriend. He picked up a BB gun that he was going to buy, and the cops, someone in the store saw him carrying the BB gun that he picked up off the shelf that he was going to buy, called the cops on him, and the cops show up and shot the guy. Now, here's the thing. In Ohio, and we actually have an article about this on the anti-media, and I'm going to have to cut you guys off here because the show's about to end here, but we have an article on the anti-media about this. In Ohio, they have open carry laws. You're allowed to open carry. So even if he was carrying a rifle around in Walmart, that's not even against the law in Ohio. That's perfectly legal. So it was just a case of the growing police state, the inherent racism, I think, that's in this institution. And it kind of goes right into this whole cop block thing. The cop block page was under attack today by these trolls that were from the National Police Wives Association and the Police Blotter. And they were trying to take down the cop block police page just because it's getting so much momentum and so much influence. And it's bringing accountability to these cops. And they don't like it. I want to thank you guys for calling in. Wonderful calls. Catch you guys on Wednesday. Feel free to call back in and we'll talk some more about the developments in Syria. Anything else on this cop block story? Thank you guys. Catch you Wednesday. Yo, here we go. Go through the stereo.